Think about this.
Our brains change.
Memory is an amazing.
What you think is in
our
there
brains
is
aren't
really
finished. They're not fully cooked yet.
You go with your heart. You don't have any idea why we're doing most of the things that we're doing. But here's the deal. With the best of intentions, people set up policies, and then they don't always work. I'm Art Markman.
I'm Bob Duke.
I'm Rebecca McEnroy.
And this is Two Guys on Your Head.
Which doesn't always work.
Oh, we've got really good intentions.
Today, the unintended consequences of policy.
When we create policies, we do it in order to influence people's behavior. Unfortunately, a lot of the times that we create these policies, we do them on the basis of a certain belief about what is going to affect people's behavior. And there wouldn't need to be a field of psychology if we were always correct about what things would influence people's behavior in particular ways. And so often psychologists end up studying the effects of particular policies, and demographers will do the same thing. I mean, to look at population level data to find out whether a particular policy was effective. And it turns out there are lots of examples of well-intentioned policies that don't work. One of my favorites is the warning labels on cigarettes. So we know cigarette smoking is bad for you. We've known it for a long time. And there has been a fairly successful public health campaign against smoking. And as we've talked about on previous shows, the most successful elements of that are things like not allowing people to smoke indoors anymore. And also the just extreme social disapproval of smokers that's made it harder in social settings for people to smoke.
And making it very expensive to smoke.
And making it very expensive, that's right. Cigarette taxes, particularly in places like New York City, are extraordinarily high. But one of the policies that doesn't work is those huge warning labels that you know, in the United States have lots and lots of words on them. And in some other countries, just say things like smoking kills.
You're right. Or have horrifying photographs of diseased organs. Yeah.
And it turns out that those don't work. They don't seem to stop anyone who's not a smoker from taking up smoking. And they actually backfire on addicted smokers, because with addicted smokers, what happens is they see a message. It's associated with smoking. That activates the goal to smoke. They then stop looking at the message because they don't really feel like exposing themselves to a message that runs counter to their self-concept. And now they have this active goal to smoke, and so then they smoke more.
Yeah.
So it actually can increase consumption. Again, despite the fact that it is a very well-intentioned policy.
This example that Art brings up is the conflict between imagining what people will do in response to a policy and what people actually do in response to a policy. And we've talked on many shows in the past about how much our behavior is influenced by things that are operating below our conscious awareness, right? So we again, tend to think that all the things that we do are choices that we make, considering all of the options and the consequences related to those choices, when almost everything we do is not that.
The interesting thing is they don't always fail.
Right.
Education of the right sort turns out to be extraordinarily effective. So let's turn now to sex education. The fascinating thing about sex education is that it does work. That is, teaching teens about birth control and avoidance of STDs and how to talk about sex and how to negotiate those early sexual relationships leads to lower incidences of teen pregnancy, lower incidences of STDs compared to another form of education that is popular in many states, including this one, abstinence-only sex education, which basically teaches that if you know, prior to being in a long-term committed relationship, you simply shouldn't have sex. And that education turns out, again, best of intentions by the people who promote it, turns out not to work. So it actually leads to increased levels of teen pregnancy, increased spreading of STDs. Because it's not that education never works, but you have to, the education has to be structured in the right way.
One of the things important to consider in any of these cases is the fact that all of the payoff for the behavior is in the near term. And all the potential but not certain negative consequences are far in the future. There is no worse scenario for human beings than to be in that case, right? Where all of the things that are really positive happen in the near term and the potential consequences happen in the long term. And again, if we believe, which we shouldn't, that human beings consider carefully the long-term consequences of our behavior and act accordingly, then those all seem like really good ideas. Yeah. But it's not that way.
But I want to back up. I think there's two separate issues here, okay? One has to do with the factors that lead people to begin to engage in a particular behavior. And then there's a second set of issues that have to do with what factors get sustain that behavior over the long term.
Yeah.
Because once it's in there,
right,
then now you've got these habits. I think that a lot of what we're trying to do now as a first step is to reduce consumption rather than just trying to stop new people from engaging in the behavior. It's much more about what are the most effective ways to intervene on something for which there's already a strong motivation to engage in. And that's where sex education comes in as well, right? One of the things we know about being a teenager is at some point, very strong motivation to engage in sexual behavior kicks in. And so, you know, we're not going to stop that. So we have to then create environments and education around what is going to happen. And what seems to be happening with abstinence-only education is we're not actually teaching people any strategies that are actually going to be useful in the context of early sexual experimentation in ways that promote healthy behaviors. And so with the best of intentions, you might say, gosh, let's just say no. Mm-hmm. But then we have to look at the data, right? Yeah. We have to actually say, well, does it work? And it doesn't. You know, at some point, you know, if you engage in a policy with the best of intentions and it's not having the effect you want, or worse, it's having the opposite of the effect you want, now you have to ask yourself, what's the more important principle? Should I stick with the forces that led me to implement that principle in the first place? Or should I admit that this policy isn't working and try something else?
Next week, we'll talk about the psychology of nouns with Dr. Art Markman and Dr. Bob Duke. David Alvarez is our engineer, and I'm Rebecca McEnroy. I produce Two Guys on Your Head at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas.